Well, hello everybody, and welcome to the KillerFrogs.com post-game analysis. I'm Sean Fouché, and with me, as always, is the original Killer Frog, Wes Phelan. Wes, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Doing good. I've got my fill of the debate, so let's talk about football.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, we're actually recording this on Monday night, and Wes just got done watching, I guess, I don't know what they're calling that. It's not the rumble in the political jungle or whatever it is. It's Trump and Hillary, but well, that's a completely different post-game analysis. So let's get into this one tonight. So we have Friday night, we had the Frogs go over to Dallas, which was kind of like a semi-home game for the Frogs, and come away with a 33-3 win against the SMU Mustangs, winning again and retaining the Iron Skillet. Wes, you actually were at home watching this game. You had a bit of a family emergency you had to deal with, and I was up in the press box. I wasn't able to obviously listen to a lot of what was going on the TV announcement. What did you take away as far as watching that at home?
Well, I watched two different games. There was a first half game and a second half game. And the first half, as we all know, was just slow and boring. The Frogs really couldn't establish much on the offensive side. They looked a little bit better. They look like they're starting to gain their ground on defense. But in the second half, we saw a completely different TCU Horned Frog team. They came out with a purpose. They came out with some passion. And on the offensive side of the ball, moved it up and down the field pretty well, pretty much at will. Kenny Hill continues to impress at quarterback. He didn't throw... He may have thrown one interception, but
yeah, we'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah, he did. He tried to force it in, but overall, it looked good. Kyle Hicks looked good running. John D'Arce, you know, that first play of that second half, it's one of my favorite plays in football. Is that quick one over the middle, and the receiver just splits the defenders and takes it in. I love watching that play, and we did it well. And D'Arce. You know, I was kind of looking for Taj Williams to be our go-to receiver. It looks like D'Arce has established himself as the guy to keep your eye on.
Oh, definitely. I mean, since the first game, everyone was thinking Taj Williams is going to be the next coming of Dotson. But since then, I think everyone's been very impressed with what D'Arce has been able to do.
Well, yeah, he's got a big body. He's not particularly lean. He's not a heavyweight. He's 6'1 or 6'2, perhaps, and about 215. You know, he's got a good, strong body. And he can take some punishment, as we all saw that hit he took in the end zone that was later called targeting, and I guess the player was ejected for it. That was a heck of a hit.
It really was. That was actually on the play that Hill threw the interception. He was trying to force it right through the middle of the SMU defense, and the ball just didn't quite make it there. He didn't see the coverage underneath, and threw the ball, unfortunately, also led D'Arce right into that safety, and that was targeting. It was textbook targeting all the way. A little disturbing to see some of the SMU fans give the guy a standing ovation as he was getting tossed out of the game for that, but we can get into the SMU fans all day long. But I really do like to see the toughness that D'Arce brings to the game, and I'll be honest with you, up in the press box, a lot of us were thinking that was the end of D'Arce for the day because there was no way with the way that we are with concussions these days. We didn't think D'Arce was going to be able to come back in, even if he wanted to. We thought the training staff was just going to say, no, we're going to keep you out for medical reasons. But we're glad to see him in, and he, like you said, that first play out of the gate in the second half took it 75 yards to the house.
Yeah, that hit, whether it lit a fire under him or the team or whatever, but that hit, he made them pay for it later on. And
it was towards the end of the first half, and that was certainly something that a lot of us were kind of watching the sidelines from the press box. I don't know if you saw it on TV, but we were all kind of looking to see if that did kind of spark something on the Frog sideline to kind of get him a little bit more emotional in this game. And it seemed to kind of bubble up slowly, but really kind of came to a head in that second half.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then another thing I took away from that game, you know, we were all lamenting the fact that Kevontae Turpin's down and we don't know how long he'll be out. So, you know, we bring in, oh my gosh, my name, can't remember.
Deontay Gray.
What's his
Gray.
Name?
Gray.
Oh, yeah. Gray. Bring him in, and Good Lord, he picks up the slack where Togante took off. And on some of those kickoff and punt returns, he was incredible.
Well, and I mean, he started off slow. I mean, because the very first kickoff, he has his foot on out of bounds on the 11-yard line, and he fields the kickoff.
Yeah,
and you're like, oh, what in the world are you doing there? And that was a little bit back and forth. It actually seemed like if he caught it out of bounds, it should have been a penalty. You can go back and watch that. But from that point on, that was the only mistake Gray made in the entire game. From that point on, he was absolutely brilliant at returns.
Yeah, and then Desmond White kind of stepped up and did a great job on punt returns. In fact, he did so well once. I saw Patterson do something that I haven't seen him do very often. That was go out on the field and hug the guy. And, you know, the camera caught a shot of it, and Patterson was clearly very happy and gave Desmond a little love. And that was great to see. You know, they've tried hard since the beginning of the season to get the ball to him, and he's dropped a few. And I kind of held my breath a couple of times when he's back there taking those punts. But by golly, he may not have the elusiveness and the quickness of Cavante, but boy, he – you know, you give him a little inch and he'll take a mile out of it, and did a great job.
Yeah, absolutely. And my apologies, you were talking about White. I thought you were talking about kickoff returns with Gray. But yeah, I mean, with Desmond White back there at punt, I mean, it was I don't want to necessarily say it was Turpin like, but I would say that if there was any drop off whatsoever between Turpin and White, it was so minuscule, it was really hard to measure, because White was absolutely brilliant on all punt returns throughout the entire game. And the only way that SMU could stop him was to ensure that he never even got close to the ball. And that happened a couple of times. But every single time he caught that ball, he pretty much ensured TCU would start in SMU territory. It was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to wonder, because you always hold your breath a little bit when Cavante Turpin got the ball, and he's 5'9", 153 pounds, and Desmond's 5'7", 160 pounds. So, they're similar build, and you got to wonder, gosh, I hope Desmond doesn't go down too. But, you know, some of these fast guys and quick like that, it's hard to get a solid lick on them. So, you know, I think Cavante's was just one of those unfortunate situations, right time and right place, and wrong time, wrong place, and he took an injury. But I just holding my breath if the same thing doesn't happen to Desmond White.
Oh, hopefully not. I mean, obviously, anybody from here on out who's going to be punting to the Frogs are going to pretty much either going to try to hang it high, going to hold on to it, maybe do one of those rugby kicks, or try to angle it out of bounds, because I don't think you want to even chance having White with the ball and on punt returns. That was a very dynamic, and it was really good to see. In fact, in that first half, it was kind of funny, you were talking a little bit going back to one of your original comments about this kind of being a game of two halves. In that first half, really the only major offensive weapon, I guess, we had in the first half was really White on the punt returns. Everything else, all of the offense itself just really couldn't get anything going. In fact, I think one of the funnier comments on Twitter during that first half was actually from Yahoo Sports, and I think they said, if you really like punts, tune in to TCU-SMU. If you like fumbles, turn into Utah and USC. So it was kind of a boring first half, I guess, on both games on Friday night. But I was really glad to see the Frogs pick it up in the second half. And like you said, it was a tale of two halves, and this really was a blowout. If you just look at the second half stats, I mean, SMU couldn't get anything going whatsoever. And it looked like every single time TCU touched the ball, they were going to come away with points. And it was something to see, because that offense finally got going. I don't know what it is with the offense this year. I don't know why they can't get things going at the beginning of the game, why it has to take a break at halftime for them to finally show up. But I think if they can put it all together, this will be a very dangerous team as we start to get into the meat of the Big 12.
Absolutely, for whatever reason, and it really started some last year. If you remember the second half of the Alamo Bowl, we came out like a house of fire. In fact, you and I were sitting together, and we'd taken that bus down there, and I think I said, you know, if we didn't have a bus full of people to get back, I think I'll hop in my car and drive home. and I'm glad I didn't. This is one of the great comebacks of all time. But that second half, for whatever reasons, carried over to this season. And sometimes I think I look at Patterson, you know, he likes to say he doesn't want to give the other team or show the next opponent too much. And I'm thinking, Gary, you didn't show them anything on that first half. You put them to sleep. And
there were so many three and outs just on both sides of the ball. I mean, the first possession for TCU was a three and out. The second possession was a three and out. The third possession, you had a holding penalty by Collins and a bad pass by Hill. That thankfully, again, because of a good return by White, at least got us within field goal range. Right. And then it was just downhill from there. I mean, it was penalties, killing drives, bad passes that were off the mark, or the interception that happened at the goal line. I don't quite get it. What's going on? It really is like two different teams going on right here. First half and second half.
You know, and we have seem to have an inordinate number of holding penalties and penalties involving the offensive line. And you can draw whatever conclusions you want on that. But
I think we all know where you're going with this one.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to say it. I'm going to be nice. But, it's just something that's got to be ironed out. Those things are correctable. They certainly are. I mean, you can't just keep shooting yourself in the foot and getting those stupid penalties.
And it was interesting because in the second half, the second possession that TCU had right after that 75-yard DR's touchdown, and then SMU comes back and they miss a 46-yard field goal. On the very next play, right after that, the second possession, first play of the second possession in the second half, we get another holding penalty. So now instead of first and 10, and I believe after that first, I think that there was like a 6-yard gain on that first down. It negated the 6-yard gain, and now you're at first and 20. You're in the hole. Yeah. Thankfully, though, you end up with Hill makes two good passes. Hicks gets a ball that looks like it was on the turf and picks it up and gets some positive yardage. And you end up with a long pass to DeArce and Williams, and then you get a couple of runs, and then we get down to the 2-yard line, and Hill connects on a fade to Austin. So the holding call there wasn't a drive killer like it was in the other two times that it was called in the first half. But, yeah, I mean, we've seen that time and time again. It happened during Arkansas. It even happened during the South Dakota State. For whatever reason, the penalties continue to kind of stack up on this offensive line.
Yeah, they do. And, again, I know it's in some cases a young line. One of the guys that keeps getting a lot of penalties, I think, was out last year. So he's maybe a little rusty. I don't know. But, of course, with Austin Schlottman out, and we don't know how long that's going to be, I don't think, yet.
And that was a very weird situation, too, because we're up in the press box, and you know how it is. We never get, everyone always asks us, hey, what have you heard about injuries whenever a guy goes down the field? And we're all like, well, if we hear anything, we'll let you know. And we never do, because they never tell anybody anything. And then here in the halftime, all of a sudden, Estridge and Denton on the radio announce that Schlottman has a broken ankle. And it gets to the press box through Twitter. Like we have to hear it through third party through Twitter that's what happened, and it immediately goes out obviously through the rest of the media. And we find out later that Patterson says whoever leaked that is getting fired, and he was pretty confident and definitive about that particular statement. I don't know if we've heard about if anybody has gotten let go from the staff or anything because of that. But that was kind of an odd situation because you generally don't get that sort of information.
Did that, so he's kind of putting a rock and a hard place on that one. I'm joking. He didn't do that. So.
Well, he's got HIPAA laws that he has to. And that's one thing people don't really understand is that we're not talking professional ball players here. We are talking about students, and as such, the university has to go by HIPAA guidelines. So you can't just give out that information to the media. So whoever did leak that does kind of put the team in it, behind the eight ball a little bit from federal guidelines standpoint. But if one of the players had said something to somebody and then they picked it up, I mean, those things, you know how it is. You've worked the sidelines with me before. Information gets out. A lot of times those guys will keep it under their hat, but sometimes it does get out, and this time it did.
Well, yeah, and a lot of times, it's pretty easy when you see somebody see somebody taken out. When I was down on the sideline shooting pictures before, I'd always kind of meander over there because the sideline at Amon Carter is so tight, you can't help but not see what's going on down there. Now, they put a tent down there and kind of covered it up a little bit. So if there is an injury going on, you know, they've got that shielded from the cameras and really from people on the sideline. It's difficult to even see who's on the laying on the training table in there anymore. So, you know, you just have to guess.
Yeah, go ahead.
Get him out of the game or take him on a gurney, then you say, well, okay, he's done for. But beyond that, you just don't know.
Right, and it was it's a bad injury for Schlottman. Like you said, we don't exactly know what his timetable is for return. But I tell you what, unlike the Oregon center who went out during the Alamo Bowl, I didn't see much drop off between Schlottman and his replacement for the rest of the game. And in fact, it was almost to be honest with you, a lot of the guys up in the press box were kind of shocked to hear that Schlottman wasn't in the game.
Yeah.
At that time, like they hadn't even noticed that there was anybody different playing center at the time. So it was kind of embarrassing on that end, but that's a good thing that the next man up is able to perform at that level.
No, absolutely. And I heard at one point they liked the way that Patrick Morris was playing so much that possibly opened the door to put Schlottman in perhaps a tackle position, which you know, would be a great thing because that would have two solid guys in there. I mean, not that the rest of them are solid, but I think Schlottman's arguably our best lineman. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know much about the others. Patrick Morris, though, impressed me with his play. A few high centers a couple of times. Other than that, he was on the mark every time, and I think he did the job in blocking. So,
well, he certainly is a good foundation to build that line around and one of the leaders on that line. So if he's able to come back, and like I said, if it is a broken ankle, it might be a fracture of some kind. We don't know. Of course, TCU hasn't said anything definitive, and we'll find out. This is Monday night, so we'll know tomorrow during the press conference. If Carlos gets Patterson a little riled up, maybe we'll find out some more information about Schlottman's injury.
But Carlos,
he's getting it from both sides. But the I think if he's able to return within 4 weeks. I think that could be a good possibility. If you end up seeing that he can move over into one of those tackle spots, I think that could really bolster this line.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, you know, there is one other thing that happened on Friday night that TCU fans were waiting with bated breath, and that was we broke the drought. We finally got not just one, but two interceptions. The first one by Nico Small and the other one by Nick Orr.
Yeah, it's just weird that we have gone. You know, Gary Patterson is defense first, and you know they work for the turnovers, and it's unusual to be in your fourth game of the season and not have a turnover.
Well, so, I think a lot of the stuff that we've seen from the defense in the first couple of games, I think they were worried more about position and assignment rather than just playing. So the defensive backs kind of feel, at least it looked just from my perspective, it looks like they were really tight. They were playing tight, and they weren't being able to play loose. They weren't being able to play like themselves, and they weren't able to be ball hawks like we're used to seeing out of a Gary Patterson defense. And that could be for any number of reasons, especially when you're dealing with like Gray coming across and being cornerback. And he did a really good job again. Of course, this is only second game playing corner for us. Tejada didn't have as many missteps as he's had in the previous game, so he looks like he's improving, which is, of course, really good, or look like he was doing well. Of course, you have to take into account the competition here. You are dealing with a young quarterback from SMU. It wasn't their big guy, their starter who was out in the first week, but overall, I think the defensive backs played a whole lot better. Linebackers picked it up again, but it was good to see Nico Small and Nick Orr come back with those two interceptions.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think overall the defensive backfield played a really good game. I mean, they had a challenge there. Cortland Sutton's an excellent receiver, and for the most part, we kept him from making any big play. He had some catches, But by and large, we did a pretty good job protecting him and then covering him, and then, of course, covering the rest of the receivers. And then on the flip side of that, putting pressure on their quarterback. My gosh, I think we had look at the stats right here real quick. I think we had two and a half, three sacks, something like that. So, you know, that's looked the wrong thing. We had four sacks. So it's not too bad. Ty Summers was given credit for half a sack. Tippi Galea, I'm gonna butcher his name every time I do it.
Well, you know, funny you mentioned butchering names, and you weren't in the press box, but a little inside baseball for those of you who've never been in the press box before. But after every single play in the press box, the home team has an announcer who announces to the media, you know, who made what catch or who made what run and what the play was as far as how many yardage was gained or lost. And every single time the announcer at SMU announced any of the TCU players, he butchered the names. In fact, at one point in time, they got the numbers all messed up. They actually gave Green the credit for the extra point on the second TCU touchdown instead of Hatfield. It was just... So don't worry about butchering names. I mean, he had the pronunciation guide in front of him, and he couldn't get it right. So,
well, that'll teach him how to read over there.
Yeah, well.
Now, speaking about linebackers, one thing that is kind of interesting, I'm looking at the tackle charts right here. Sammy Douglas did play because I saw him on special teams, but the prior week, you know, Summers, Gray, and then Howard were 1, 2, and 3 in tackles.
Yes.
And I don't remember seeing Gray in there much at all. In fact, he is not given credit for a tackle here.
Gray or Douglas?
I'm sorry, Sammy Douglas.
Yeah.
We didn't see him at all. I saw him on special teams, but
right.
It was mostly Howard and Summers in the rotation there.
Yeah, it was a bit surprising. A lot of us were kind of questioning why that was. It could have been just because of some of the carryover from the previous week. I know there were a few things that Patterson wasn't too keen about that Douglas had done, but Summers picked it up again. Howard had a really good game. There were a couple of good defensive plays that Howard made actually on the edge, and one that I can remember, one really good open field tackle that Summers made again. He's done that almost every single week he's been starting at linebacker. So the linebacker core right now is, as odd as it may sound, I think a lot of us going into the season had a big question mark over the linebackers, but I think the linebackers seem to be the most solid unit on this defense at this point.
Oh, no doubt about it. Howard's looking very good. Summers is looking good. Douglas looked good when he's in there. I don't really understand why he's not, but that's not my call. That's Coach Patterson's. The defensive line picked it up a little bit. They weren't going against an all-world offensive line at SMU, but they certainly did their fair share in there. They got some bull rushes going. Curry did very well. He had four tackles. Four solo tackles.
Mm-hmm. McFarland picked it up too, but mainly you saw that in the second half. In the first half, it seemed like they were going more for containment, which is kind of odd because Matt Davis is the rushing quarterback or the mobile quarterback at SMU, and he's out. So I was curious as to why they were trying to play containment for the most part. They weren't really getting much of a rush at all in the first half. The second half, that's where the majority of the sacks came in, and that's where the majority of the pressure came in. And it showed because SMU couldn't do anything with the ball in the second half. It was a night and day difference.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And but once again, he continued to rotate those defensive ends in. You know, Brandon Bowen played, got credit for a solo tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Tippi, of course, Galea. I'm sorry, Tippi. You're going to have to pronounce it for me.
we're going to get you a pronunciation guide, too, there, Wes.
Finally learned how to pronounce that one. But Chris Bradley, did well. Alec Dunham, of course, in the linebacker some. We've got we had some guys rotating in there and did quite well. Joseph Broadnax looks like he may be the defensive lineman of the future for us. Overall, I think the defense is starting to figure it out a little bit, and they're going to need to because they got a big challenge this week.
Well, and on the offensive side, Hill passed the ball around a lot. I mean, I think we saw about 7 different receivers get the ball, and not only did we get Hicks the ball early and often, but we also got to see a little bit of TJ. In fact, he got a touchdown in this particular game. Didn't see a lot of green in this particular game, but I think the offense, at least the running game, seems to be pretty solid at the moment. Still need to get a little bit more push, though, on the offensive line. There were a couple of third and short situations, especially in that first half, where I felt like the offensive line just didn't get the push off the snap that they needed to in order to get the extra yardage, and of course we came up short.
Yeah, and you know, you said, I just counted the number of receivers. 12 receivers caught passes in this game.
So I was only off by about five.
Yeah, you're only about, it's okay. Just anybody can do that. But Desmond White had six, John DeArce had six, Taj Williams had five, Kyle Hicks, Jalen Austin had two, Dylan Thomas, first time we've seen him come around, mm-hmm. Trevante Heights had that 42-yard completion.
That was a brilliant catch and run.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, that was perfect. I mean, that was a beautiful pass right there. So, you know, it's good. You need a lot of receivers in an offense like this, and playing 12 or getting 12 involved and actually catching passes is a great thing. So, you know, Kenny Hill, 31 of 45 for 452 yards. He's coming along.
He is. And I was pretty harsh on him last week, but – what I saw this week, he did protect the ball. I mean, that was one forced pass that he was trying to get to DeArce, and he did miss the underneath guy. But there was still in that first half, like I said, it was a night and day difference. In that first half, it was kind of like the Kenny Hill that I kind of criticized a bit last week. He was really tunneling in on certain receivers. He wasn't progressing through his reads. There were a couple of very lazy passes, a lot of passes behind the receivers, a couple passes that were over their heads. But in that second half, it was good Kenny Hill. If we go back to the good Dalton, bad Dalton days, it was the good Kenny Hill show in the second half.
He was checking all his progressions there, because I'd stand there and watch him, or not stand there, but I'd sit here in my comfort of my easy chair and watch him, and I was very proud of him. The only thing I even questioned was that one interception. If he just put a little more air on that ball, it wouldn't have been picked off by SMU. But, you know, he decided to zip it in there, and, you know, he made the call, and, you know, it would have been a touchdown if that SMU guy hadn't shown up. But, hey, it is what it is.
Well, thankfully, that it didn't hurt us. It was a ill-timed turnover, and certainly would have helped us there. But, you know, TCU went into the halftime with a 6-3 lead, which was more than Baylor could say against SMU. They at least allow SMU to score six. But, I mean, overall, I think you come away from Dallas, and it was a good game. It was a good win for the Frogs. Certainly confidence builder on a lot of different levels. The special teams showed up again. You get Graff and Hatfield did an excellent job at kicking. You got another one of those nice little ricochet shots in, but it was good, so you can't complain about that. Nunez, again, continues to impress with the punting game. The punt coverage was fantastic. Punt return, and we've already talked about White at punt return. The special team seems to be doing very well. Defense is starting to come along. Offense, if they can just figure out how to do it in the first half. Like I said, I think this team is starting to come together, and it's coming together at the right time. And I think this week with Oklahoma coming into Fort Worth is going to be the ultimate test to see if this team can put it all together at the right time.
No doubt about it. And OU, it's going to be a challenge. I mean, they're certainly disappointed the way their season's going so far. I mean, it's been a long time since I can imagine or thought of Oklahoma coming into this game, or this, you know, it being 2-2 at this, or 2-1 rather, at this point in the season. Their only win was over.
No, they have two losses, Ohio State and Houston.
Yeah, and Houston pretty well drubbed them, and then Ohio State just took them to the cleaners in Norman. Yeah, and that happened.
Really, really bad losses for Oklahoma.
Oh, huge. And I'm sure – I don't know if the drums are beating up there for Bob Stoop yet, but, you know, a couple more losses and they will be.
Well, from what I hear, and I've talked to – and this is totally anecdotal evidence, but I have talked to a few donors for OU, and the long knives are out for Stoops at the moment. If Stoops doesn't do something quick – he's going to be gone. I think what a lot of OU donors would like to see is his brother get the boot first. And that may give Bob Stoops a little bit more time. But I don't know. I don't know how much longer with less miles now on the market. You may have some OU donors thinking, you know what, maybe we should fire Stoops and go for less miles. I don't know. But it'll be interesting now that the coaching carousel has begun this early in the season.
Well, yeah, you mentioned Stoops' brother, and I can remember when he and Brent Venables, who's now the coordinator at Clemson, were the co-coordinators at OU. And, you know, Stoops went off to coach at Arizona, and I guess Venables went on to coach at Clemson. Now Stoops is back at Oklahoma with his brother. And it's pretty clear now who the straw that stirred the drink over there was. I think it was all Brent Venables.
Yeah, it wasn't Stoops, that's for sure.
Same. One funny Mike Stoops story, you know, Scott, or you and I in the press box last year, weren't we?
Up in Norman. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so we're sitting there. Remember, you kept hearing that at the right up above us and the layer above us, level above us where the coaches were, you kept hearing this stomp, stomp, stomp. It's right over our heads, and it was Mike Stoops. Every time something wrong went, man, he'd stomp his feet.
I remember.
And at one point in the third quarter, I'm looking up, just happened to be glancing up, and I see some black object, which I think was a stapler being thrown out the window.
and a good ream of paper, too, if I recall. And that actually, that was probably right after Bram had done some sort of Houdini trick where he got out of what could have been an absolute terrible sack and like completes a downfield pass in the middle of the field like 30 yards or something. I forgot who he passed it to, but right after that it was like raining paper. It was like a ticker tape parade in Norman, Oklahoma, and it was coming from Mike Stoops up above us.
He's a wild man, and I think what we heard up there last year, if you remember, is that somebody said, yeah, Bob Stoops had to put him up in the press box because he's just a little too wild on the sideline. And
I believe it.
Yeah, I believe it too. And I hope whoever got hit with that stapler, if somebody did, then they come back and sue him for it, because you shouldn't be throwing things like that at a window.
Well, they got those club boxes underneath the press box area that actually overhang a bit. So unless it ricocheted off of the roof of one of those, I think he's safe. He probably knew that. Who knows how many wonderful things are left at the top of those club boxes at the end of every single OU game, but who knows? Well,
yeah, if you're in the salvage business, you might head over there. You might get some bargains.
Stuff. You know. You might find Mike Stapler.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so anyway, well, Wes, that brings us to the end of our analysis for SMU. Thanks for joining us tonight, everybody. And don't forget, this Wednesday night at Brewster's, another episode of the Killer Frogs Hour. Get there early, order some wonderful drinks. They got 50-some-odd drinks on tap and several bottle beers available as well, and all sorts of wonderful specials. But we'll have another guest lined up. You can go online and see who that is tomorrow. And Wes, getting ready for Oklahoma?
I am getting ready for Oklahoma. You bet. Absolutely. I'm going to go. But first, I'm going to go to Brewster's on Wednesday night and have a couple of those Jack Sliders, which are pretty darn good.
Those were good.
Yeah, they were. I've been dreaming about those since my wife's been trying to feed me vegetarian food. I think since she's out of town all week, I'm going to sneak out of a couple of Jack Sliders.
Well, okay. Well, that brings us to the end. And thank you, everybody, for joining us. Wes, go Frogs.
All right, go Frogs.